Welcome back to another episode of Winning Through Culture. I am very excited today to be with Sean Farrell. Sean is the CEO of QDS. It is a cash handling business, and we'll talk a little bit more about that, that is celebrating its 40th anniversary as we do this recording. They have grown from 2 to 13 states across the Southeast and Atlantic seaboard, and they have grown to almost 100 employees, actually 99 at the end of May. Sean and his team have a ministry that was started in 2021, formalized Lionheart Charities, which is now a 501(c) that started as a ministry and care team, which we'll talk about. And Sean and I know each other from our C12 experience. He is a great entrepreneur, a great leader, great father, a great contributor to the community. So welcome, Sean.
Hi, Tim. So glad to be here. It's always excited to get together and always enjoy talking about culture. So this should be fun.
Yes. So really looking forward to this episode. Sean and I got into a discussion and I have watched you develop a great culture. I know we both have been impacted by our time in C12 on the importance and intentionality of culture. And I think you've done a remarkable job of taking that to heart and to really incorporating into your business while you've both grown and gone through transitions. So today's episode is really about diving into some of the things that you've done, what you've learned, and ultimately how other businesses can take an intentional approach to culture in a way that really makes a difference and impact on the people, both that work there and the people you serve.
That's right. It is not about ping pong tables and snacks. So I look forward to sharing our story.
So let's just take a minute. I'd love for you to share a little bit more about your background, you know, how you got into the business and a little bit of the journey over the last 20 years for you professionally.
Yeah, so my father started the business in 1983 with a couple guys and really came out of a business that had blinders on, and he had been on a product review board and really found that there were a bunch of products available to the market and they just needed distribution. So he put together some best of breed products. I never thought I would go into the family business, so I grew up a baseball player. You know, we're here in Charlotte, so kind of grew up in the Mara area in Matthews, played All-Stars, like I just had a ball. Growing up as an athlete, I was blessed to have an opportunity to play baseball at the University of North Carolina, had a really good career there. It's College World Series time right now.
So
it's been very fun to watch those games on TV, which have been great. Was fortunate enough to be drafted by the Oakland A's, part of the whole kind of Moneyball scenario with Billy Beane. And unfortunately, I kind of hurt my shoulder kind of my senior year into that draft cycle. So I came back to QDS in the off season to make some money and rehab my shoulder and kind of fell in love with sales. As you know, I am super competitive. I don't even like to let my kids win at anything at home. So anything that involves competition, I kind of found that outlet in sales. So I have that mantra of just having a near allergy to complacency, like always wanting to work and get better. And that's a lot of the principles that we've instilled at QDS is just, it's a lot more of the Andy Stanley better before bigger. And if you are working to improve and get better, then you're going to get bigger. And we have. So became our CEO April of 2012. So about 11 years ago. This is my 20th anniversary at QDS, and we have grown from about a $2 million business to about a $25 million business. So it's been a wild ride.
It's a great trajectory. And again, I think that for today, kind of leaning into what you mentioned about how the growth trajectory of the company somewhat parallels the intentionality of your focus on culture. So when you think about culture, Sean, and what it means at QDS, I mean, what are the kind of the table stakes, the elements that are important to you and your team?
Yeah, I mean, I think about the word care a lot. So I know sometimes in today's culture, having a company like a family is often looked down upon from a lot of the HR professionals. But I would say that was one of the values that Dad instilled at the beginning, is really just having it operate like a family, taking care of people. And I've certainly learned that as we've gone through these growth cycles of being very aware of people have other things going on in their life besides their work, and it's very much an integrated life. So if they're having challenges at home, they're often going to bring those challenges to work and it can impact performance. So we have taken a very intentional approach to get involved in the lives of our people and help them hopefully professionally grow, but also work on their lives at home we're very big, and a lot of our recruiting efforts now are on work-life balance. So a lot of our competitors in the space, a lot of our technicians out there are used to running tons of overtime and having to be on call all hours of the night. So we've really focused on that's not how we do business. We have set boundaries for when we need to shut it down. So again, seeing our people as whole human beings, not just employees, has been a very integral part of our fiber since the beginning.
With that as a backdrop, I'm curious, when you talk about the work-life balance and the shift it sounds like you made there, I mean, what precipitated the shift to a more intentional focus around that?
I don't know if it was necessarily a shift as much as just an awareness.
Okay.
When you have that care for people, you tend to ask different questions. So if you're getting involved in how is their life going in general versus how are they just performing in their job function, I very much value people who are self-aware. So I think one of the good things of having that intentional culture is if you do that right, people will open up. And I think that's one of the keys is to have honest, transparent conversations. And I think cultures that don't have that as a strength, they often end up in this kind of dichotomy of maybe the company says they want feedback, but they have trouble getting honest feedback because they haven't created a culture where if you're going to be vulnerable or transparent, you're not going to have that deeper level conversation and not feel cared for. You feel like you could end up in an HR in a bad conversation. Yeah. So I think setting that foundation from the beginning of being open, honest, transparent, admitting that we have faults as well, even as leaders, I think has softened that up to people feel like they can truly be honest. And if we have issues we need to work on or things to progress the business, then it's an open conversation versus, ooh, I don't know that you can tell the boss that.
Yeah. You mentioned self-awareness. That's a topic we've tackled before in this podcast. And I'm curious, both for yourself and then the other leaders in the organization, what are some of the things you've done to develop that self-awareness?
Yeah, I mean, anything from there's a variety of testing things you can do out there. I think C12 does a good job of setting you up with some tools to just, I would say, audit. That is one of those words of just thinking about how am I actually doing? Do I understand my strengths and weaknesses? And am I okay communicating those to others? So one of the phrases I say a lot at QDS is, I make mistakes too. Mine are just a lot more expensive. So I think that sets the tone of people understand that the leader can make mistakes. Mm-hmm. And if they see how we correct and, hey, I don't want to make that mistake over and over, that I have awareness of these are the challenges I've had before. This is why I'm coaching you in this way to hopefully avoid the mistake I made. But you're doing it from an authentic place versus that culture of people just being scared to death to make a mistake and feel like they're going to lose their job if they ever make a mistake. So that would be one example I can think of.
Yeah.
Certainly interviewing as well. I think that's something that has caught my antenna as of late is just when you value that self-awareness, you may ask a question like, hey, what's one thing you're trying to work on? Or, you know, how would you evaluate kind of your own weakness? And if that person really has trouble identifying any of their weaknesses, then that's normally a red flag for us, which propagates that culture. Right. They're clearly perfect, as many of those people are out there in the world, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Sticking with theme self-awareness for a minute, what do you see as the impact of a self-aware leader? I'm going to start there, and then I'll come back to a second question I have. What impact does that person have in your experience versus the leader that's not self-aware?
I feel like it is easier to follow a leader who is self-aware. I think there are plenty of great leaders that can have a variety of personality traits, whether they're a high D on the disc or just in how they interact with people. But if they don't have that self-awareness to be authentic with people, I think that's where they can get into trouble. So I think having that self-awareness allows you to stay out of tricky situations. You can also talk about that in hiring or as your leadership team in general. Mm-hmm. If you're open and honest about your weaknesses, I feel like people will generally try to fill that gap for you because if they like you as a leader and what you're trying to do with the business and the culture, I would say strong people want to protect those weaknesses. But if you don't have that self-awareness and aren't authentic in that way, then it can be a turnoff to people of there's a disconnect between who that person says they are and how they act and who they actually are.
How they show up, yeah. So a big component of what you're talking about really ends up being around authenticity and vulnerability, which, depending on whose point of view you take, is either a strength or a weakness. How have you been able to be authentic and vulnerable in a way that people don't perceive as a weakness?
I guess I hope that they don't perceive it as a weakness. I guess I haven't gotten that feedback. And some people would say I'm too transparent at times, that I don't want to show too much of the fault. But I try to take my role as a coach very seriously. And so not only having the impacts and the lessons that I've learned in the business world, but mm-hmm. also personal life. Like, here's how I learned a lesson on how to serve my spouse. Here's how I think about time with my kids, yeah. and the kids spell love, T-I-M-E. So trying to show people where I've made mistakes and fallen down. And so when I'm coaching, they know that it comes from that place of, this isn't from a textbook. This is like real life experiences. Yeah. And I remember him sharing those issues. And it goes back to, I think, another key part of our culture I have found to be successful is recognition. We are very much a thank you culture. So when we talk about things that go a long way, recognition is one of those things. I'm a big fan of custom giving. So one of the biggest wins, if you want to call it a win, was how was I going to recognize some of our key service leaders? And these are people that often work beyond the 40 hours a week. Yep. They're handling the calls on the weekend. They have the upset customer calls. So I got them each fitted for custom suits because it was something that they probably wouldn't buy for themselves. It's something they may not wear very often, but to me, it was also something that would impact their personal life. And it's been great to see some of those stories of whether they were out on an anniversary dinner with their spouse or they got to wear it to a wedding at a key life event. That was what really made the magic for me mm-hmm. and was the blessing for me, was to see it actually used in key life events versus many of them may not even ever use that suit in their work life. So it's kind of a cool story.
Probably not showing up to a service call.
Right. Correct. Correct.
So appreciation and gratitude and recognition are another hallmark of your culture. I think you've done some really cool things in that area. I'd love for you to share a little bit about how you bring people together, because some of the ideas, well, they're not ideas, they're things you're actually doing, but ideas that I've picked up from you are fantastic.
And I think that's one of the challenges of maintaining culture as we've grown, of you want to make sure you keep that family style feel, but as you grow in size, it's harder for me to individually touch people. Mm-hmm. So it gets down to really building systems and processes of, hey, we have recognition as something we want to do as a company culture. How do we do that? So one of the tools we've invested in is a recognition platform called Nectar. And so this is really good for peer-to-peer shout outs. It's integrated to Amazon so people can win points. We've tied it to all of our core values. So it's not just performance driven, but hey, so-and-so really stayed after and helped me with this. So that recognizes our teamwork component or any number of factors. So we have peer-to-manager recognition. We've got peer-to-peer recognition. And I think in our first month, which we launched it in February of this year, we had over 200 shout-outs go out across that platform. So it was a way to really drive that home and make recognition part of the everyday. Every employee gets up to 50 points they can distribute, and our managers get slightly more than that. So it's very much from a leadership level, coaching people to pay attention and recognize the things that may often go on behind the curtain that may get overlooked. And it really allows the entire company to see people get recognized. We also do a big annual meeting, which I would say we put on our largest production here in January. And it was an idea from one of our leaders 2 years ago. And it started with everyone had a picture and people would write notes of appreciation on sticky notes. Mm-hmm. This year, we had more of a formalized kind of white frame around the picture and markers that people could write in. But you can imagine the impact of a person and even some of our newest people that the annual meeting was literally the week they started, to have 5 to 12 people write a note of welcome to the team, we're so excited to have you, to individual people getting recognition. It's just been such a neat concept. So I certainly want to shout out one of our previous leaders, Caitlin, that came up with that idea. It has been well appreciated 2 years in a row, but just a little thing of recognition that everyone can write something nice about someone. And it's been cool. I've still got mine up in my office.
It sounds like from a standpoint of as you grew and you realized you couldn't touch and be that person for everyone, you created a peer-to-peer community of recognition with that system Nectar, which I think is fantastic. And your annual meeting gives, again, everybody a chance to come together live and give some recognition in a more personalized way. When you think about the business side of all that, Sean, I mean, you guys have grown immensely, both in terms of revenue, a number of institutions you serve, and people. I mean, how much of this focus on culture do you attribute to that growth?
I would say it's not been without its challenges.
Oh, you mean it's not easy?
It's not like you just click the box and things just happen and culture stays. Apparently,
culture easy button.
I think one of the phrases I learned was, you're going to have a culture one way or another. Do you want to be intentional about it?
Exactly.
Or is it going to drive itself?
Yeah, it's going to create itself.
So one of the challenges we have is we are spread out across 12 or 13 states. And so I have leveraged a lot of video communication because I think a lot can get lost in the written word. And a lot of our people are working out of their homes. So our field service technicians typically work out of their homes and cover a 2 to 3 hour circle. So how do we maintain with, say, 60 to 70% of the company not being in our corporate office? Mm-hmm. How do we maintain culture? So video communication has been a big win for us. So at least at minimum on a quarterly basis, kind of given a state of the union of the company, again, transparent to a fault. I think it's very important for everyone to understand like how we're doing financially. We've now set up a lot of corporate goals. And again, going back to recognition, we used to have a company-wide bonus at the end of the year that was based on profitability. Again, Dad and I taking that generosity thing of, we basically set aside roughly 10% of our profit to be evenly distributed amongst the employees. So now we've turned that into a little more of a quarterly KPI where those people who are truly top performers can receive a little more frequent and a little bit higher benefit for that performance. But it has been amazing to see when you give people transparent information and how they understand that the goals connect to how the company is performing or not performing. A lot of our challenge lately has revenue doesn't equate to bottom line profitability.
Never does, so not everyone gets that concept.
We've got like a little bell we ring for sales. Yeah. So I think a lot of our people, and this is again an adjustment I've had to make, is they hear about the wins and they hear the revenue dollars, but they don't understand how long it takes us to actually recognize that revenue.
Yeah.
And only a percent of that is profitable.
Yeah.
So that's been another key tool that we've leveraged is just trying to get on video. We had good feedback on a town hall we did at our annual meeting. So we've now set up quarterly town hall. So myself and my COO, Kevin, we do roughly a 45-minute town hall. Again, here's the state of the company. Here's the big projects we're moving. Here's what maybe we didn't do so well this quarter. And then we answer employee questions. So again, just keeping that culture of staying in front of people, realizing that we're human as well. Here's how we're doing, the good, bad, and the ugly, and then taking open questions. And it's been good to build culture.
Yeah. So the intentionality is obviously very high. The workplace, as I said to somebody this morning, it's not easy being an employer today for a variety of different reasons. How has all this impacted retention?
I think it's been good. I mean, we have had several of our talented folks attempted to be poached. And, you know, a lot of times that comes down to dollar signs. And so I would take it as a good sign of our key talent is often turning down larger dollar signs because they feel they are in a place where they are valued.
Yep.
We do have strong benefits. So, you know, there's just the general benefits that every employee would hope to have, the healthcare, things like that. But when you start getting into bonuses and paid time off and a paid servant day and the ability to do leadership training and just have an opinion and an impact on where the company is going, I think a lot of our key middle managers and talent moving up towards the leadership team have highly valued that. So that must be doing something right. And I think people really understand that we try to make a difference. So as you tie that ministry component back, you can go to an organization that maybe is only about the bottom line and only about the dollars and cents. And I think a lot of our people are bought into we are serving the greater community. And if our company is doing great, then that's going to have a greater impact on the communities that we serve. So we started that internal. We had such success and such a drive for that, that we started Lionheart Charities as a 501c3 to really do more. And I think a lot of our people buy into that, that they see that when the company does well, that those dollars get funneled directly in the places that they care about locally. So it's nice.
Yeah. I want to touch on something you said, and we'll come back to the care team and the ministry. But I think I've done this podcast now for 3+ years and talking to a lot of business leaders like yourself and just kind of paying attention to what's transpired literally in the last 3 years, really since COVID started, and it's over, but I mean, it's that era. Is there are companies like QDS and leaders like you, Sean, that actually invest in their people, create an environment that's got psychological safety associated with it, gives people a sense of purpose and a sense of community, and truly invest in them, not just monetarily, but with opportunities for growth. And I'd call that the relational culture. And then there are companies that throw a lot of money around and are more transactional and don't provide that. And that's not to say that a company that provides great culture can't be competitive in salaries, because I think they can. But I'm definitely seeing a trend of companies that don't invest in that tend to just throw the dollars out to attract people. And sometimes they're successful and take a person from an organization like yours into a, I'll call it a more transactional environment. And that person then has to make a decision. Did I make a good decision? Did I value what I had? Or is this extra money really worth it? It's interesting hearing you talk about retention and how you see that. Because again, talking to a lot of other business leaders, I'm definitely seeing that as a trend.
It's been interesting. And I would guess a byproduct of doing things right. And I don't even know where the credit goes for this, but just our people enjoy working with our people. So going back to that relational aspect of, there's just such a embedded culture of teamwork of, I've never had someone not want to help me out. And so as we've had new people come into the organization, one of the questions I typically ask them early on is, are we who you thought we were in the interview process? And a lot of times it's every bit or better. Mm-hmm. And like, everyone is just so helpful and everyone is so nice. So I guess you could say that comes from the top, but that to me is where the culture has really been intentional and sunk in, is we have a bunch of people that are working towards a common goal and they want others to be successful in that. And often maybe they've been waiting for that person, as we talk about hiring challenges, you know, maybe we can't always get people as quickly as we used to. So now it's like they've been shorthanded or they've needed this body for 90 days, 180 days, and now they get them. They want that person to be successful. So it's just a galvanizing effect of, as we've brought, you know, upwards of 18 new people in year to date, just how those people feel welcomed. They want to get up to speed quickly. And we've done a great job, and I'll give our HR team credit. We've done a much better job of onboarding, having clear written procedures and things like that. So that's been another lesson I've learned, is expectations and procedures and standard operating procedures. We felt that a few years ago because we were growing, we were adding people, and without the procedures, it takes them a lot longer to get up to speed, because it's, well, how do I do this? It's like, oh, well, so-and-so knows how to do that.
Go see them.
It's not documented. And so we spent a lot more time in training versus like, hey, here you go. Like, here's the procedure. So it's been an interesting dichotomy.
The power of process and documented, followed by all. So let's go back to Lionheart Ministries, because again, I know this is something that's both important to you as a person and a leader and has been impactful in the business. But why don't you just talk about, as a refresher for those that may not know what C12 is, it's a monthly group of business owners that get together and go over content that's rooted in faith-based focus. And there's a business section to it. There's a ministry section to it. And then there's a service component. And then there's a something called a core business presentation. But you and I have both been in that together now for, been in 10 years. I think you've been in close to that.
Right at it.
So I know we were both impacted a few years back by a session in C12 on intentional culture. And a part of that's care team. So why don't you talk about the evolution of the care team to where you are today with Lionheart Ministries?
Yeah. So I think it goes back to one of the principles we were introduced to in C12, is that ultimately it's God's business and we are simply a steward at the captain of the ship, so to speak. So once you kind of understand that principle and the principle of business as a ministry, of if we are successful as a business, we create thriving communities. So that starts with the business itself, how it conducts itself as a company in the market.
The marketplace, yeah.
How that impacts our employees' lives. And then we talk a lot about if we're 100 employees, that's really 300 to 400 people when you bring into consideration their family. So the genesis of that goes back to when we first started doing ministry in our company. We had a particular employee whose spouse was struggling with cancer and they did not have insurance. So we elected to do a raise. We introduced the employees of the company to what was going on, and the company was going to match 100% of whatever people wanted to give. And we were able to hand that particular employee a $10,000 check. And the impact that that had on the people of the office, again, we were much smaller back then, but just nearly in tears handing somebody this check and just the impact it had on the community. So that spun up into, we built a more formalized ministry or care team of, hey, Dad and I want to funnel funding into ministry, but we don't want to be the ultimate deciders of how that money gets spent. So we had a group of five or six people come together. So whether you call it a care team, ministry team, they were looking out for employee needs. We determined we wanted to stay local. Yes, there are plenty of worldwide things you can get involved in, plenty of challenges in Africa and other places all over the world, but we really wanted to focus our impacts locally. So that was first responders. We've done a lot with breast cancer things because we've had a number of employees touched by that. And then you pick another 50 or 60 different things that we've been able to funnel that into. And then we found out through our CPA that a lot of those things, you know, hey, you can't really do that. That's not deductible. So we really wanted to take that next level. So as my dad was exiting the business, which he exited the business in July, he's now the managing director of Lionheart Charities, and his full-time job, if you will, is to search out ministries that we can support, raise funding. And so our goal is hopefully QDS becomes part of that ministry funding and much less all of that funding, and we continue to impact communities there. We still have internal people involved that are kind of the liaisons, but I would just encourage you to, it is amazing. You don't have to look very far to find opportunities to help. And I will tell you, one of the most impactful things we've done is chaplaincy. Mm-hmm. So again, this goes back to creating a system of, there were a lot of people that we wanted to help that Dad and I were not equipped to help, whether that was emotionally or resource-wise. Like, there were truly problems. It's like,
yeah,
I don't know how to give you advice to help out with that. So we brought on chaplaincy about 2 years ago, and our chaplain does a great job of building relationships and giving people that confidential sounding board to talk about things going on, either stressors at work or a lot more like, hey, here's what's going on in my personal life. So that has been a very small investment with a very large return. And again, it just strengthens the culture of people know that the chaplain is there to care for them as people. And that's a reflection of leadership.
Yeah, safely and confidentially.
Correct.
Yeah, which is important. So a lot of focus from an intentional perspective when you kind of cycle back as I'm listening to you. Transparency, authenticity, self-awareness, and in the encouragement and development of self-awareness in your leaders, communication on a regular cadence that's backed that up, expressions of gratitude and recognition of a job well done, and then really investing in people as people and the rest of their life outside of work, what they need to be a successful human being. All very impactful things you've done in a very intentional way, all the while growing a company, going through a transition from your father to you as the sole CEO of the, well, you were the sole CEO of the business, but to be
sole owner,
sole owner of the business. Yeah. Anything else that, you know, as you think about the journey of the last decade, Sean, of QDS, anything else that you'd give to a business owner? Because again, I think for some people, when they hear some of these concepts, like, I can't do that, I can't do that, I can't do that, or people take advantage of me. So how do you navigate some of the pitfalls of integrating, implementing some of these ideas?
You know, I think one is having intentionality around getting feedback. I think we often make decisions that we think are the best for our employees, but when you ask them, and we're going through this now, of there is only so much money. So we have enlightened you as
doesn't grow on a tree.
We are investing anywhere from 50 to 80 grand a year in benefits and bonus and all these things that we think you value, but maybe you don't. So give us some feedback on, are we directing the dollars the right direction? Would you have us do things differently? So I think having transparent feedback and being able to take action on that, I think that's a pitfall that a lot of people, if they give you stuff and you don't do anything with it, I think that can also erode trust in the leadership.
I think that's a really important point, because I think some organizations think they should get feedback, and they do, but then they don't do anything with it. And I always say, you're better off having not gotten the feedback, and be careful what you ask for, because, you know, if there's anything I've seen over the last few years is employees are a lot more willing to say what they feel versus be reluctant to do so.
That was one of the things I was going to mention. So as someone who struggles with wanting to be liked by everyone, I think that's one of the things I've had to wrestle with growth is, at some level, you can't please everyone. And so that has been a tough lesson I've had
not
to
all
learn.
The time, at least.
Right. Do you want to please everyone? You got to sell ice cream or something like that. It is amazing, now that you give people the ability to have their opinions, how often they want to give you that opinion and how you're making mistakes and things like that. So I would just encourage anyone that's going through that growth cycle of, you're never really going to make everyone happy all of the time. So still trying to use your leadership team and key feedback to really funnel in the feedback of, all right, we surveyed 100 people and we had 95 people say, this is great. And we had 5 people, like, that's always going to happen somewhere.
I think you have to be careful what you ask for feedback on, because if it's something you can't do anything about, to your point, it doesn't matter what the feedback is. It's not necessarily anything you're either can or willing to do anything about, but there are plenty of things you can find in the business that you can get feedback on that you can move off of your current position or thinking on and move to a different way. But yeah, you also can't let 5% of the population dictate what is deemed to be right for the vast majority of people in the organization.
I would say one other culture success is helping people define what winning looks like.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the most common things we hear in interviews is, I want to be somewhere I can grow. And it's like, great, I hear that all the time. What does that mean?
What does it mean
to you? Is that skills? Is that you want to lead people?
Make more money.
Right. Everyone, it's, you know, I want to move up and make more money. It's like, okay, they naturally think manager is the promotion they want. It's like, okay, so do you want 8 or 10 people's problems to be yours now? Or do you want to be a technical expert that has this specific expertise? If the money is the same, which way do you gravitate towards? But I think, A, defining expectations in people's roles and then helping them understand what winning in the job looks like and what good performance is, and helping also tie that to the personal side. So I think just as a leader, those who ask better questions, I think that's a key to having a strong culture, is if people genuinely feel you care about them as people and you ask the right questions, it's going to lead to better success.
Yeah. Better questions, better outcomes, better clarity, for sure. Anything else as we think about culture that really has been impactful, or any parting thoughts to business owners and entrepreneurs as they're being intentional about building their culture?
You know, again, just driving home the earlier point of, don't be afraid to be transparent and vulnerable. You'll be surprised at how strongly people will respond to that. When you put walls up and feel like you have to have that imposter syndrome of, this is what the people expect of me as a leader, I think that's a myth.
Yeah, good luck with that.
I think the more transparent, vulnerable you can be, you will be pleasantly surprised at how strong people will rally around you, because they see you as the person you are versus the person you think that you're trying to be.
Yeah, you'll have 10 people give you 15 different expectations under that model.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, Sean Farrell, been great to be with you. CEO of QDS, celebrating their 40th anniversary, making a big difference in the greater Charlotte community and really all 13 states you serve now. Real big difference through Lionheart Charities and the people that you touch, both working for QDS every day and the people that you serve. So again, really appreciate you joining us on Winning Through Culture today. I admired you. I've been loving watching what you're doing over the years and how you're making such a big difference. So thanks for being with us today.
Thanks for having me, Tim. It was great.
Thank you again for being with us. Another episode of Winning Through Culture. Until we are together again, stay relevant and be impactful.